11. The New Idol. Somewhere, there are still peoples and herds, but not with us, my brothers. Here, there are states. A state? What is that? Well, open now your ears to me, for now will I say to you my word concerning the death of peoples. A state is called the coldest of all cold monsters. Coldly lies it also, and this lie creeps from its mouth. I, the state, am the people. It is a lie. Creators were they who created peoples, and hung a faith and a love over them. Thus they served life. Destroyers are they who lay snares for many and call it the state. They hang a sword and 100 cravings over them. Where there is still a people, there the state is not understood, but hated as the evil eye, and as sin against laws and customs. This sign I give to you. Every people speaks its language of good and evil. This its neighbour understands not. Its language has it devised for itself in laws and customs. But the state lies in all languages of good and evil, and whatever it says, it lies, and whatever it has, it has stolen. False is everything in it. With stolen teeth it bites the biting one. False are even its bowels. Confusion of language of good and evil. This sign I give to you as the sign of the state. Verily, the will to death indicates this sign. Verily, it beckons to the preachers of death. Many too many are born. For the superfluous ones was the state devised. See just how it entices them to it, the many too many. How it swallows and chews and re-chews them. On earth, there is nothing greater than I. It is I who am the regulating finger of God. Thus roars the monster. And not only the long-eared and short-sighted fall upon their knees. Ah, even in your ears, you great souls, it whispers its gloomy lies. Ah, it finds out the rich hearts which willingly lavish themselves. Yea, it finds you out too, you conquerors of the old God. Weary you became of the conflict, and now your weariness serves the new idol. Heroes and honourable ones, it would like to set up around it the new idol. Gladly it basks in the sunshine of good consciences, the cold monster. Everything will it give you if you worship it, the new idol. Thus it purchases the lustre of your virtue and the glance of your proud eyes. It seeks to allure by means of you the many too many. Yea, a hellish artifice has here been devised, a death horse jingling with the trappings of divine honours. Yea, a dying for many has here been devised, which glorifies itself as life. Verily, a hearty service to all preachers of death. The state, I call it, where all are poison drinkers, the good and the bad. The state, where all lose themselves, the good and the bad. The state, where the slow suicide of all is called life. Just see these superfluous ones. They steal the works of the inventors and the treasures of the wise. Culture, they call their theft, and everything becomes sickness and trouble to them. Just see these superfluous ones. Sick are they always. They vomit their bile and call it a newspaper. They devour one another and cannot even digest themselves. Just see these superfluous ones. Wealth they acquire and become poorer thereby. Power they seek for, and above all, the lever of power, much money, these impotent ones. See them clamber, these nimble apes. They clamber over one another, and thus scuffle into the mud and the abyss. Towards the throne they all strive. It is their madness, as if happiness sat on the throne. Oft-times sits filth on the throne, and oft-times also the throne on filth. Madmen they all seem to me, and clambering apes, and too eager. Badly smells their idol to me, the cold monster. Badly they all smell to me, these idolaters. My brothers, will you suffocate in the fumes of their maws and appetites? Better break the windows and jump into the open air. Do go out of the way of the bad odour. Withdraw from the idolatry of the superfluous. Do go out of the way of the bad odour. Withdraw from the steam of these human sacrifices. Open still remains the earth for great souls. Empty are still many sites for lone ones and twain ones, around which floats the odour of tranquil seas. Open still remains a free life for great souls. Verily, he who possesses little is so much the less possessed. Blessed be moderate poverty. There, where the state ceases, there only commences the man who is not superfluous. There commences the song of the necessary ones, the single and irreplaceable melody. There, where the state ceases, pray look there, my brothers. Do you not see it? The rainbow and the bridges of the Superman? Thus spoke Zarathustra. 12. The Flies in the Marketplace. Flee, my friend, into your solitude. I see you deafened with the noise of the great men, and stung all over with the stings of the little ones. Admirably do forest and rock know how to be silent with you. Resemble again the tree which you love, the broad-branched one. Silently and attentively it o'erhangs the sea. Where solitude ends, there begins the marketplace. And where the marketplace begins, there begins also the noise of the great actors, and the buzzing of the poison flies. In the world, even the best things are worthless without those who represent them. Those representers the people call great men. Little do the people understand what is great, that is to say, the creating agency, but they have a taste for all representers and actors of great things. Around the devisers of new values revolves the world. Invisibly it revolves. But around the actors revolve the people and the glory. Such is the course of things. Spirit has the actor, but little conscience of the spirit. He believes always in that wherewith he makes believe most strongly, in himself. Tomorrow he has a new belief, and the day after one still newer. Sharp perceptions has he, like the people, and changeable humours. To upset, that means with him to prove. To drive mad, that means with him to convince. And blood is counted by him as the best of all arguments. A truth which only glides into fine ears, he calls falsehood and trumpery. Verily, he believes only in gods that make a great noise in the world. Full of clattering buffoons is the marketplace, and the people glory in their great men. These are, for them, the masters of the hour. But the hour presses them, so they press you, and also from you they want yea or nay. Alas, you would set your chair betwixt for and against? On account of those absolute and impatient ones, be not jealous, you lover of truth. Never yet did truth cling to the arm of an absolute one. On account of those abrupt ones, return into your security. Only in the marketplace is one assailed by yea or nay. Slow is the experience of all deep fountains. Long have they to wait until they know what has fallen into their depths. Away from the marketplace and from fame takes place all that is great. Away from the marketplace and from fame have ever dwelt the devisers of new values. Flee, my friend, into your solitude. I see you stung all over by the poisonous flies. Flee there, where a rough, strong breeze blows. Flee into your solitude. You have lived too closely to the small and the pitiable. Flee from their invisible vengeance. Towards you they have nothing but vengeance. Raise no longer an arm against them. Innumerable are they, and it is not your lot to be a fly-whisk. Innumerable are the small and pitiable ones, and of many a proud structure raindrops and weeds have been the ruin. You are not stone, but already have you become hollow by the numerous drops. You will yet break and burst by the numerous drops. Exhausted I see you by poisonous flies. Bleeding I see you, and torn at 100 spots, and your pride will not even upbraid. Blood they would have from you in all innocence, blood their bloodless souls crave for, and they sting therefore in all innocence. But you, profound one, you suffer too profoundly even from small wounds, and ere you had recovered, the same poison-worm crawled over your hand. Too proud are you to kill these sweet tooths, but take care lest it be your fate to suffer all their poisonous injustice. They buzz around you also with their praise. Obtrusiveness is their praise. They want to be close to your skin and your blood. They flatter you as one flatters a god or devil. They whimper before you as before a god or devil. And what does it come to? Flatterers are they, and whimperers, and nothing more. Often, also, do they show themselves to you as amiable ones. But that has ever been the prudence of the cowardly. Yea, the cowardly are wise. They think much about you with their circumscribed souls. You are always suspected by them. Whatever is much thought about is, at last, thought suspicious. They punish you for all your virtues. They pardon you in their inmost hearts only for your errors. Because you are gentle and of upright character, you say, blameless are they for their small existence. But their circumscribed souls think, blameable is all great existence. Even when you are gentle towards them, they still feel themselves despised by you, and they repay your beneficence with secret maleficence. Your silent pride is always counter to their taste. They rejoice if once you be humble enough to be frivolous. What we recognize in a man, we also irritate in him. Therefore, be on your guard against the small ones. In your presence they feel themselves small, and their baseness gleams and glows against you in invisible vengeance. Did you not see now how often they became dumb when you approached them, and how their energy left them like the smoke of an extinguishing fire? Yea, my friend, the bad conscience are you of your neighbours, for they are unworthy of you. Therefore they hate you, and would like to suck your blood. Your neighbours will always be poisonous flies. What is great in you, that itself must make them more poisonous, and always more fly-like. Flee, my friend, into your solitude, and there, where a rough, strong breeze blows, it is not your lot to be a fly-whisk. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 13. Chastity. I love the forest. It is bad to live in cities. There are too many of the lustful. Is it not better to fall into the hands of a murderer than into the dreams of a lustful woman? And just look at these men. Their eyes say it. They know nothing better on earth than to lie with a woman. Filth is at the bottom of their souls, and alas, if their filth has still spirit in it. Would that you were perfect, at least as animals, but to animals belongs innocence. Do I counsel you to slay your instincts? I counsel you to innocence in your instincts. Do I counsel you to chastity? Chastity is a virtue with some, but with many, almost a vice. These are continent, to be sure, but doggish lust looks enviously out of all that they do. Even into the heights of their virtue, and into their cold spirit, doth this creature follow them, with its discord. And how nicely can doggish lust beg for a piece of spirit, when a piece of flesh is denied it? You love tragedies, and all that breaks the heart, but I am distrustful of your doggish lust. You have two cruel eyes, and you look wantonly towards the sufferers. Has not your lust just disguised itself, and taken the name of fellow-suffering? And also, this parable give I to you. Not a few who meant to cast out their devil went thereby into the swine themselves. To whom chastity is difficult, it is to be dissuaded, lest it become the road to hell, to filth and lust of soul. Do I speak of filthy things? That is not the worst thing for me to do. Not when the truth is filthy, but when it is shallow, does the discerning one go unwillingly into its waters. Verily, there are chaste ones from their very nature. They are gentler of heart, and laugh better and oftener than you. They laugh also at chastity, and ask, "What is chastity? Is chastity not folly? But the folly came to us, and not we to it. We offered that guest harbour and heart. Now it dwells with us. Let it stay as long as it will." Thus spoke Zarathustra. 14. The Friend. "One is always too many about me," thinks the anchorite. "Always wants one, that makes two in the long run." I and me are always too earnestly in conversation. How could it be endured if there were not a friend? The friend of the anchorite is always the third one. The third one is the cork which prevents the conversation of the two sinking into the depth. Ah, there are too many depths for all anchorites. Therefore do they long so much for a friend and for his elevation. Our faith in others betrays wherein we would like to have faith in ourselves. Our longing for a friend is our betrayer. And often with our love we want merely to overleap envy. And often we attack and make ourselves enemies to conceal that we are vulnerable. "Be at least my enemy." Thus speaks the true reverence which doth not venture to solicit friendship. If one would have a friend, then must one also be willing to wage war for him, and in order to wage war, one must be capable of being an enemy. One ought still to honour the enemy in one's friend. Can you go near unto your friend, and not go over to him? In one's friend, one shall have one's best enemy. You shall be closest unto him with your heart when you withstand him. You would wear no raiment before your friend. It is in honour of your friend that you show yourself to him as you are. But he wishes you to the devil on that account. He who makes no secret of himself shocks. So much reason have you to fear nakedness. Aye, if you were gods, you could then be ashamed of clothing. You cannot adorn yourself fine enough for your friend, for you shall be to him an arrow and a longing for the Superman. Did you ever see your friend asleep, to know how he looks? What is usually the countenance of your friend? It is your own countenance, in a coarse and imperfect mirror. Did you ever see your friend asleep? Were you not dismayed at your friend looking so? Oh, my friend, man is something that has to be surpassed. In divining and keeping silence shall the friend be a master. Not everything must you wish to see. Your dream shall disclose to you what your friend does when awake. Let your pity be a divining, to know first if your friend wants pity. Perhaps he loves in you the unmoved eye and the look of eternity. Let your pity for your friend be hid under a hard shell. You shall bite out a tooth upon it. Thus will it have delicacy and sweetness. Are you pure air and solitude, and bread and medicine to your friend? Many a one cannot loosen his own fetters, but is nevertheless his friend's emancipator. Are you a slave? Then you cannot be a friend. Are you a tyrant? Then you cannot have friends. Far too long has there been a slave and a tyrant concealed in woman. On that account, woman is not yet capable of friendship. She knows only love. In woman's love, there is injustice and blindness to all she does not love. And even in woman's conscious love, there is still always surprise and lightning and night along with the light. As yet, woman is not capable of friendship. Women are still cats and birds, or, at the best, cows. As yet, woman is not capable of friendship. But tell me, you men, who of you are capable of friendship? Ah, your poverty, you men, and your sordidness of soul. As much as you give to your friend, will I give even to my foe, and will not have become poorer thereby. There is comradeship. May there be friendship. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 15. The 1001 Goals. Many lands saw Zarathustra, and many peoples. Thus he discovered the good and bad of many peoples. No greater power did Zarathustra find on earth than good and bad. No people could live without first valuing. If a people will maintain itself, however, it must not value as its neighbour values. Much that passed for good with one people was regarded with scorn and contempt by another. Thus I found it. Much found I here called bad, which was there decked with purple honours. Never did the one neighbour understand the other. Ever did his soul marvel at his neighbour's delusion and wickedness. A table of excellences hangs over every people. Lo, it is the table of their triumphs. Lo, it is the voice of their will to power. It is laudable what they think hard. What is indispensable and hard they call good, and what relieves in the direst distress the unique and hardest of all, they extol as holy. Whatever makes them rule and conquer and shine to the dismay and envy of their neighbours, they regard as the high and foremost thing, the test and the meaning of all else. Verily, my brother, if you knew but a people's need, its land, its sky, and its neighbour, then would you divine the law of its surmountings, and why it climbs up that ladder to its hope. Always shall you be the foremost and prominent above others. No one shall your jealous soul love except a friend. That made the soul of a Greek thrill. Thereby went he his way to greatness. to speak truth, and be skilful with bow and arrow. So seemed it alike pleasing and hard to the people from whom comes my name, the name which is alike pleasing and hard to me. To honour father and mother, and from the root of the soul to do their will. This table of surmounting hung another people over them, and became powerful and permanent thereby. To have fidelity, and for the sake of fidelity to risk honour and blood, even in evil and dangerous courses. Teaching itself so, another people mastered itself, and, thus mastering itself, became pregnant and heavy with great hopes. Verily, men have given to themselves all their good and bad. Verily, they took it not, they found it not, it came not to them as a voice from heaven. Values did man only assign to things in order to maintain himself. He created only the significance of things, a human significance. Therefore, calls he himself man, that is, the valuator. Valuing is creating. Hear it, you creating ones. Valuation itself is the treasure and jewel of the valued things. Through valuation only is there value, and without valuation the nut of existence would be hollow. Hear it, you creating ones. Change of values, that is, change of the creating ones. Always does he destroy who has to be a creator. Creating ones were first of all peoples, and only in late times individuals. Verily, the individual himself is still the latest creation. Peoples once hung over them tables of the good. Love, which would rule, and love, which would obey, created for themselves such tables. Older is the pleasure in the herd than the pleasure in the ego, and as long as the good conscience is for the herd, the bad conscience only says, ego. Verily, the crafty ego, the loveless one, that seeks its advantage in the advantage of many, it is not the origin of the herd, but its ruin. Loving ones was it always, and creating ones that created good and bad. Fire of love glows in the names of all the virtues, and fire of wrath. Many lands saw Zarathustra, and many peoples. No greater power did Zarathustra find on earth than the creations of the loving ones. Good and bad are they called. Verily, a prodigy is this power of praising and blaming. Tell me, you brothers, who will master it for me? Who will put a fetter upon the thousand necks of this animal? 1,000 goals have there been hitherto, for 1,000 peoples have there been. Only the fetter for the 1,000 necks is still lacking. There is lacking the one goal. As yet, humanity has not a goal. But pray tell me, my brothers, if the goal of humanity be still lacking, is there not also still lacking humanity itself? Thus spoke Zarathustra. 16. Neighbor love. You crowd around your neighbor, and have fine words for it. But I say unto you, your neighbor love is your bad love of yourselves. You flee to your neighbor from yourselves, and would like to make a virtue thereof. But I fathom your unselfishness. The you is older than the I. The you has been consecrated, but not yet the I. So man presses near to his neighbour. Do I advise you to neighbour love? Rather do I advise you to neighbour flight, and to furthest love. Higher than love to your neighbour is love to the furthest and future ones. Higher still than love to men is love to things and phantoms. The phantom that runs on before you, my brother, is fairer than you. Why do you not give to it your flesh and your bones? But you fear and run to your neighbour. You cannot endure it with yourselves, and do not love yourselves sufficiently. So you seek to mislead your neighbour into love, and would like to gild yourselves with his error. Would that you could not endure it with any kind of near ones, or their neighbours. Then would you have to create your friend and his overflowing heart out of yourselves. You call in a witness when you want to speak well of yourselves, and when you have misled him to think well of you, you also think well of yourselves. Not only does he lie who speaks contrary to his knowledge, but more so, he who speaks contrary to his ignorance. And thus speak you of yourselves in your intercourse, and belie your neighbour with yourselves. Thus says the fool, association with men spoils the character, especially when one has none. The one goes to his neighbour because he seeks himself, and the other because he would like to lose himself. Your bad love to yourselves makes solitude a prison to you. The furthest ones are they who pay for your love to the near ones, and when there are but five of you together, a sixth must always die. I love not your festivals either. Too many actors found I there, and even the spectators often behaved like actors. Not the neighbour do I teach you, but the friend. Let the friend be the festival of the earth to you, and a foretaste of the superman. I teach you the friend and his overflowing heart. But one must know how to be a sponge if one would be loved by overflowing hearts. I teach you the friend in whom the world stands complete, a capsule of the good, the creating friend, who has always a complete world to bestow. And as the world unrolled itself for him, so rolls it together again for him in rings, as the growth of good through evil, as the growth of purpose out of chance. Let the future and the furthest be the motive of your today. In your friend shall you love the superman as your motive. My brothers, I advise you not to neighbour love. I advise you to furthest love. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 17. The Way of the Creating One. Would you go into isolation, my brother? Would you seek the way unto yourself? Tarry yet a little, and hearken to me. He who seeks may easily get lost himself. All isolation is wrong. So say the herd. And long did you belong to the herd. The voice of the herd will still echo in you. And when you say, I have no longer a conscience in common with you, then will it be a plaint and a pain. Lo, that pain itself did the same conscience produce, and the last gleam of that conscience still glows on your affliction. But you would go the way of your affliction, which is the way unto yourself. Then show me your authority and your strength to do so. Are you a new strength and a new authority, a first motion, a self-rolling wheel? Can you also compel stars to revolve around you? Alas, there is so much lusting for loftiness. There are so many convulsions of the ambitions. Show me that you are not a lusting and ambitious one. Alas, there are so many great thoughts that do nothing more than the bellows. They inflate and make emptier than ever. Free do you call yourself. Your ruling thought would I hear of, and not that you have escaped from a yoke. Are you one entitled to escape from a yoke? Many a one has cast away his final worth when he has cast away his servitude. Free from what? What does that matter to Zarathustra? Clearly, however, shall your eye show to me. Free for what? Can you give to yourself your bad and your good, and set up your will as a law over you? Can you be judge for yourself, and avenger of your law? Terrible is aloneness with the judge and avenger of one's own law. Thus is a star projected into desert space, and into the icy breath of aloneness. Today suffer you still from the multitude, you individual. Today have you still your courage unabated, and your hopes. But one day will the solitude weary you. One day will your pride yield, and your courage quail. You will one day cry, I am alone. One day will you see no longer your loftiness, and see too closely your lowliness. Your sublimity itself will frighten you as a phantom. You will one day cry, all is false. There are feelings which seek to slay the lonesome one. If they do not succeed, then must they themselves die. But are you capable of it, to be a murderer? Have you ever known, my brother, the word disdain, and the anguish of your justice in being just to those that disdain you? You forced many to think differently about you. That charged they heavily to your account. You came near to them, and yet went past. For that they never forgive you. You go beyond them, but the higher you rise, the smaller does the eye of envy see you. Most of all, however, is the flying one hated. How could you be just to me, must you say? I choose your injustice as my allotted portion. Injustice and filth cast they at the lonesome one. But, my brother, if you would be a star, you must shine for them none the less on that account, and be on your guard against the good and just. They would like to crucify those who devise their own virtue. They hate the lonesome ones. Be on your guard also against holy simplicity. All is unholy to it that is not simple. Likewise would it play with the fire of the faggot and stake. And be on your guard also against the assaults of your love. Too readily does the recluse reach his hand to anyone who meets him. To many a one may you not give your hand, but only your paw. And I wish your paw also to have claws. But the worst enemy you can meet will you yourself always be. You waylay yourself in caverns and forests. You lonesome one, you go the way to yourself, and past yourself and your seven devils leads your way. A heretic will you be to yourself, and a wizard, and a soothsayer, and a fool, and a doubter, and a reprobate, and a villain. Ready must you be to burn yourself in your own flame. How could you become new if you have not first become ashes? You lonesome one, you go the way of the creating one. A god will you create for yourself out of your seven devils. You lonesome one, you go the way of the loving one. You love yourself, and on that account despise you yourself, as only the loving ones despise. To create, desire the loving one, because he despises. What knows he of love who has not been obliged to despise just what he loved? With your love, go into your isolation, my brother, and with your creating, and late only will justice limp after you. With my tears, go into your isolation, my brother. I love him who seeks to create beyond himself, and thus succumbs. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 18. Old and young women. Why steal you along so furtively in the twilight, Zarathustra? And what hide you so carefully under your mantle? Is it a treasure that has been given you, or a child that has been born you? Or go you yourself on a thief's errand, you friend of the evil? Verily, my brother, said Zarathustra, it is a treasure that has been given me. It is a little truth which I carry. But it is naughty, like a young child, and if I hold not its mouth, it screams too loudly. As I went on my way, alone today, at the hour when the sun declines, there met me an old woman, and she spoke thus to my soul.
Much has Zarathustra spoken also to us women, but never spoke he unto us concerning woman.
And I answered her, Concerning woman, one should only talk to men.
Talk also to me of woman, said she. I am old enough to forget it presently.
And I obliged the old woman, and spoke thus to her. Everything in woman is a riddle, and everything in woman has one solution. It is called pregnancy. Man is for woman a means. The purpose is always the child. But what is woman for man? Two different things wants the true man, danger and diversion. Therefore wants he woman as the most dangerous plaything. Man shall be trained for war, and woman for the recreation of the warrior. All else is folly. Two sweet fruits, these the warrior likes not. Therefore likes he woman, bitter is even the sweetest woman. Better than man does woman understand children, but man is more childish than woman. In the true man there is a child hidden. It wants to play. Up then, you women, and discover the child in man. A plaything let woman be, pure and fine like the precious stone, illumined with the virtues of a world not yet come. Let the beam of a star shine in your love. Let your hope say, May I bear the Superman. In your love, let there be valour. With your love, shall you assail him who inspires you with fear. In your love, be your honour. Little does woman understand otherwise about honour. But let this be your honour, always to love more than you are loved, and never be the second. Let man fear woman when she loves. Then makes she every sacrifice, and everything else she regards as worthless. Let man fear woman when she hates, for man in his innermost soul is merely evil. Woman, however, is mean. Whom hates woman most? Thus spoke the iron to the lodestone. I hate you most, because you attract, but are too weak to draw to you. The happiness of man is, I will. The happiness of woman is, he will. Lo, now has the world become perfect. Thus thinks every woman, when she obeys with all her love. Obey must the woman, and find a depth for her surface. Surface is woman's soul, a mobile, stormy film on shallow water. Man's soul, however, is deep. Its current gushes in subterranean caverns. Woman surmises its force, but comprehends it not. Then answered me the old woman, Many fine things, has Zarathustra said, especially for those who are young enough for them. Strange. Zarathustra knows little about woman, and yet he is right about them. Does this happen because with women nothing is impossible? And now accept a little truth by way of thanks. I am old enough for it. Swaddle it up and hold its mouth. otherwise it will scream too loudly, the little truth. Give me, woman, your little truth, said I. And thus spoke the old woman.
You go to women? Do not forget your whip.
Thus spoke Zarathustra. 19. The Bite of the Adder. One day had Zarathustra fallen asleep under a fig tree, owing to the heat, with his arms over his face. And there came an adder and bit him in the neck, so that Zarathustra screamed with pain. When he had taken his arm from his face, he looked at the serpent, and then did it recognize the eyes of Zarathustra, wriggled awkwardly, and tried to get away.
Not at all, said Zarathustra. As yet have you not received my thanks. You have awakened me in time. My journey is yet long.
Your journey is short, said the adder sadly. My poison is fatal.
Zarathustra smiled. When did ever a dragon die of a serpent's poison? Said he. But take your poison back. You are not rich enough to present it to me. Then fell the adder again on his neck and licked his wound. When Zarathustra once told this to his disciples, they asked him, And what, O Zarathustra, is the moral of your story? And Zarathustra answered them thus, The destroyer of morality, the good and just call me. My story is immoral. When, however, you have an enemy, then return him not good for evil, for that would abash him, but prove that he has done something good to you, and rather be angry than abash anyone. And when you are cursed, it pleases me not that you should then desire to bless. Rather curse a little also. And should a great injustice befall you, then do quickly 5 small ones besides. Hideous to behold is he on whom injustice presses alone. Did you ever know this? Shared injustice is half justice, and he who can bear it shall take the injustice upon himself. A small revenge is humaner than no revenge at all, and if the punishment be not also a right and an honour to the transgressor, I do not like your punishing. Nobler is it to own oneself in the wrong than to establish one's right, especially if one be in the right. Only, one must be rich enough to do so. I do not like your cold justice. Out of the eye of your judges there always glances the executioner and his cold steel. Tell me, where find we justice, which is love with seeing eyes? Devise me, then, the love which not only bears all punishment, but also all guilt. Devise me, then, the justice which acquits every one except the judge. And would you hear this likewise? To him who seeks to be just from the heart, even the lie becomes philanthropy. But how could I be just from the heart? How can I give every one his own? Let this be enough for me. I give to everyone my own. Finally, my brothers, guard against doing wrong to any anchorite. How could an anchorite forget? How could he requite? Like a deep well is an anchorite. Easy is it to throw in a stone. If it should sink to the bottom, however, tell me, who will bring it out again? Guard against injuring the anchorite. If you have done so, however, well then, kill him also. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 20. Child and Marriage. I have a question for you alone, my brother. Like a sounding lead, Cast I this question into your soul, that I may know its depth. You are young, and desire child and marriage. But I ask you, are you a man entitled to desire a child? Are you the victorious one, the self-conqueror, the ruler of your passions, the master of your virtues? Thus do I ask you. Or does the animal speak in your wish and necessity, or isolation, or discord in you? I would have your victory and freedom long for a child. Living monuments shall you build to your victory and emancipation. Beyond yourself shall you build. But first of all must you be built yourself, rectangular, in body and soul. Not only onward shall you propagate yourself, but upward. For that purpose may the garden of marriage help you. A higher body shall you create, a first movement, a spontaneously rolling wheel. A creating one shall you create. Marriage. So call I the will of the twain to create the one that is more than those who created it. The reverence for one another, as those exercising such a will, call I marriage. Let this be the significance and the truth of your marriage. But that which the many too many call marriage, those superfluous ones, what shall I call it? The poverty of soul in the twain. The filth of soul in the twain. The pitiable self-complacency in the twain. Marriage, they call it all, and they say their marriages are made in heaven. Well, I do not like it, that heaven of the superfluous. No, I do not like them, those animals tangled in the heavenly toils. Far from me also be the God who limps there to bless what he has not matched. Laugh not at such marriages. What child has not had reason to weep over its parents? Worthy did this man seem, and ripe for the meaning of the earth. But when I saw his wife, the earth seemed to me a home for madcaps. Yea, I would that the earth shook with convulsions when a saint and a goose mate with one another. This one went forth in quest of truth as a hero, and at last got for himself a small decked-up lie. His marriage, he calls it. That one was reserved in intercourse, and chose choicely. But one time he spoilt his company for all time. His marriage, he calls it. Another sought a handmaid with the virtues of an angel, but all at once he became the handmaid of a woman, and now would he need also to become an angel. Careful. Have I found all buyers, and all of them have astute eyes, but even the most astute of them buys his wife in a sack. Many short follies. That is called love by you. And your marriage puts an end to many short follies with one long stupidity. Your love to woman, and woman's love to man? Tch! Would that it was sympathy for suffering and veiled deities. But generally, two animals alight on one another. But even your best love is only an enraptured simile and a painful ardour. It is a torch to light you to loftier paths. Beyond yourselves shall you love some day. Then learn, first of all, to love. And on that account you had to drink the bitter cup of your love. Bitterness is in the cup even of the best love. Thus does it cause longing for the superman. Thus does it cause thirst in you, the creating one. Thirst in the creating one, arrow and longing for the superman. Tell me, my brother, is this your will to marriage? Holy call I such a will, and such a marriage. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 21. Voluntary death. Many die too late, and some die too early. Yet strange sounds the precept, die at the right time. Die at the right time, so teaches Zarathustra. To be sure, he who never lives at the right time, how could he ever die at the right time? Would that he might never be born. Thus do I advise the superfluous ones. But even the superfluous ones make much ado about their death, and even the hollowest nut wants to be cracked. Every one regards dying as a great matter, but as yet death is not a festival. Not yet have people learnt to inaugurate the finest festivals. The consummating death I show to you, which becomes a stimulus and promise to the living. His death dies the consummating one triumphantly, surrounded by hoping and promising ones. Thus should one learn to die, and there should be no festival at which such a dying one does not consecrate the oaths of the living. Thus to die is best. The next best, however, is to die in battle and sacrifice a great soul. But to the fighter, equally hateful as to the victor, is your grinning death, which steals nigh like a thief, and yet comes as master. My death, praise I to you, the voluntary death, which comes to me because I want it. And when shall I want it? He that has a goal and an heir wants death at the right time for the goal and the heir. And out of reverence for the goal and the heir, he will hang up no more withered wreaths in the sanctuary of life. Verily, not the rope-makers will I resemble. They lengthen out their cord, and thereby go ever backward. Many a one also waxes too old for his truths and triumphs. A toothless mouth has no longer the right to every truth. And whoever wants to have fame must take leave of honour betimes and practice the difficult art of going at the right time. One must discontinue being feasted upon when one tastes best. That is known by those who want to be long loved. Sour apples are there, no doubt, whose lot is to wait until the last day of autumn, and at the same time they become ripe, yellow, and shrivelled. In some ages the heart first, and in others the spirit, and some are hoary in youth, but the late young keep long young. To many men life is a failure. A poison worm gnaws at their heart. Then let them see to it that their dying is all the more a success. Many never become sweet. They rot even in the summer. It is cowardice that holds them fast to their branches. Far too many live, and far too long hang they on their branches. Would that a storm came and shook all this rottenness and worm-eatenness from the tree. Would that there came preachers of speedy death. Those would be the appropriate storms and agitators of the trees of life. But I hear only slow death preached, and patience with all that is earthly. You preach patience with what is earthly. This earthly is it that has too much patience with you, you blasphemers. Verily, too early died that Hebrew whom the preachers of slow death honour, and to many has it proved a calamity that he died too early. As yet had he known only tears and the melancholy of the Hebrews, together with the hatred of the good and just, the Hebrew Jesus. Then was he seized with the longing for death. Had he but remained in the wilderness, and far from the good and just, then perhaps would he have learnt to live and love the earth, and laughter also. Believe it, my brothers, he died too early. He himself would have disavowed his doctrine had he attained to my age. Noble enough was he to disavow, but he was still immature. Immaturely loves the youth, and immaturely also hates he man and earth. Confined and awkward are still his soul, and the wings of his spirit. But in man there is more of the child than in the youth, and less of melancholy. Better understands he about life and death. Free for death, and free in death. A holy naysayer, when there is no longer time for yea. Thus understands he about life and death. That your dying may not be a reproach to man and the earth, my friends, that do I solicit from the honey of your soul. In your dying shall your spirit and your virtue still shine like an evening afterglow around the earth. Otherwise your dying has been unsatisfactory. Thus will I die myself, that you, friends, may love the earth more for my sake, and earth will I again become, to have rest in her that bore me. Verily, a goal had Zarathustra. He threw his ball. Now be you, friends, the heirs to my goal. To you throw I the golden ball. Best of all, do I see you, my friends, throw the golden ball. And so tarry I still a little while on the earth. Pardon me for it. Thus spoke Zarathustra. Zarathustra's Discourses. 1. The Three Metamorphoses. Three metamorphoses of the spirit do I designate to you. How the spirit becomes a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion at last a child. Many heavy things are there for the spirit, the strong, load-bearing spirit in which reverence dwells. For the heavy and the heaviest longs its strength. What is heavy? So asks the load-bearing spirit. Then kneels it down like the camel and wants to be well laden. What is the heaviest thing, you heroes? Asks the load-bearing spirit, that I may take it upon me and rejoice in my strength. Is it not this? To humiliate oneself in order to mortify one's pride, to exhibit one's folly in order to mock at one's wisdom. Or is it this? To desert our cause when it celebrates its triumph, to ascend high mountains to tempt the tempter. Or is it this? To feed on the acorns and grass of knowledge, and for the sake of truth to suffer hunger of soul? Or is it this? To be sick and dismiss comforters, and make friends of the deaf who never hear your requests? Or is it this? To go into foul water when it is the water of truth, and not disclaim cold frogs and hot toads? Or is it this, to love those who despise us, and give one's hand to the phantom when it is going to frighten us? All these heaviest things the load-bearing spirit takes upon itself, and, like the camel, which, when laden, hastens into the wilderness, so hastens the spirit into its wilderness. But in the loneliest wilderness happens the second metamorphosis. Here the spirit becomes a lion. Freedom will it capture, and lordship in its own wilderness. Its last lord it here seeks. Hostile will it be to him, and to its last god. For victory will it struggle with the great dragon. What is the great dragon, which the spirit is no longer inclined to call Lord and God? You shall, is the great dragon called. But the spirit of the lion says, I will. You shall, lies in its path, sparkling with gold, a scale-covered beast, and on every scale glitters golden, you shall. The values of 1,000 sand years glitter on those scales, and thus speaks the mightiest of all dragons. All the values of things glitter on me. All values have already been created, and all created values do I represent. Verily, there shall be no I will any more. Thus speaks the dragon. My brothers, wherefore is there need of the lion and the spirit? Why suffices not the beast of burden, which renounces and is reverent, to create new values, that even the lion cannot yet accomplish? But to create itself freedom for new creating, that can the might of the lion do. To create itself freedom and give a holy no even to duty, for that, my brothers, there is need of the lion. To assume the right to new values, that is the most formidable assumption for a load-bearing and reverent spirit. Verily, to such a spirit it is praying, and the work of a beast of prey. At its holiest, it once loved, you shall. Now it is forced to find illusion and arbitrariness even in the holiest things, that it may capture freedom from its love. The lion is needed for this capture. But tell me, my brothers, what the child can do, which even the lion could not do. Why has the praying lion still to become a child? Innocence is the child, and forgetfulness, a new beginning, a game, a self-rolling wheel, a first movement, a holy yea. Aye, for the game of creating, my brothers, there is needed a holy yea unto life. Its own will wills now the spirit. His own world wins the world's outcast. Three metamorphoses of the spirit have I designated to you. How the spirit became a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion, at last, a child. Thus spoke Zarathustra. And at that time he lived in the town, which is called the Pied Cow. 2. The Academic Chairs of Virtue. People commended to Zarathustra a wise man, as one who could discourse well about sleep and virtue. Greatly was he honoured and rewarded for it, and all the youths sat before his chair. To him went Zarathustra, and sat among the youths before his chair. And thus spoke the wise man.
Respect and modesty in presence of sleep, that is the first thing, and to go out of the way of all who sleep badly and keep awake at night. Modest is even the thief in presence of sleep. He always steals softly through the night. Immodest, however, is the night watchman. Immodestly he carries his horn. No small art is it to sleep. It is necessary for that purpose to keep awake all day. 10 times a day must you overcome yourself. That causes wholesome weariness, and is poppy to the soul. 10 times must you reconcile again with yourself, for overcoming is bitterness, and badly sleep the unreconciled. 10 truths must you find during the day. Otherwise, will you seek truth during the night, and your soul will have been hungry. 10 times must you laugh during the day, and be cheerful. Otherwise, your stomach, the father of affliction, will disturb you in the night. Few people know it, but one must have all the virtues in order to sleep well. Shall I bear false witness? Shall I commit adultery? Shall I covet my neighbour's maidservant? All that would ill accord with good sleep. And even if one have all the virtues, there is still one thing needful, to send the virtues themselves to sleep at the right time, that they may not quarrel with one another, the good females. And about you, you unhappy one, peace with God and your neighbour so desires good sleep, and peace also with your neighbour's devil, otherwise it will haunt you in the night. Honour to the government, and obedience, and also to the crooked government, so desires good sleep. How can I help it, if power like to walk on crooked legs? He who leads his sheep to the greenest pasture shall always be, for me, the best shepherd. So does it accord with good sleep. Many honours I want not, nor great treasures. They excite the spleen. But it is bad sleeping without a good name and a little treasure. A small company is more welcome to me than a bad one. But they must come and go at the right time. And so does it accord with good sleep. Well, also do the poor in spirit please me. They promote sleep. Blessed are they, especially if one always give in to them. Thus passes the day to the virtuous. When night comes, then take I good care not to summon sleep. It dislikes to be summoned. Sleep, the lord of the virtues. But I think of what I have done and thought during the day. Thus ruminating, patient as a cow, I ask myself, what were your 10 overcomings, and what were the 10 reconciliations, and the 10 truths, and the 10 laughters with which my heart enjoyed itself? Thus pondering, and cradled by 40 thoughts, it overtakes me all at once. Sleep, the unsummoned, the lord of the virtues. Sleep taps on my eye, and it turns heavy. Sleep touches my mouth, and it remains open. Verily, on soft soles does it come to me, the dearest of thieves, and steals from me my thoughts. Stupid do I then stand, like this academic chair. But not much longer do I then stand. I already lie. When Zarathustra heard the wise man thus speak, he laughed in his heart, for thereby had a light dawned upon him. And thus spoke he to his heart. A fool seems this wise man with his 40 thoughts, but I believe he knows well how to sleep. Happy even is he who lives near this wise man. Such sleep is contagious. Even through a thick wall it is contagious. A magic resides even in his academic chair. And not in vain do the youths sit before the preacher of virtue. His wisdom is to keep awake in order to sleep well. And verily, if life had no sense, and had I to choose nonsense, this would be the most desirable nonsense for me also. Now know I well what people sought formerly above all else when they sought teachers of virtue. Good sleep they sought for themselves, and poppy-head virtues to promote it. To all those belauded sages of the academic chairs, wisdom was sleep without dreams. They knew no higher significance of life. Even at present, to be sure, there are some, like this preacher of virtue, and not always so honourable. But their time is past, and not much longer do they stand. There they already lie. Blessed are those drowsy ones, for they shall soon nod to sleep. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 3. Back-worldsman. Once on a time, Zarathustra also cast his fancy beyond man, like all back-worldsmen. The work of a suffering and tortured god, did the world then seem to me. The dream and diction of a god,
did the world then seem to me. Coloured vapours before the eyes of a divinely dissatisfied one. Good and evil, and joy and woe, and I and you, coloured vapours did they seem to me before creative eyes. The Creator wished to look away from himself, and thereupon he created the world. Intoxicating joy is it for the sufferer to look away from his suffering and forget himself. Intoxicating joy and self-forgetting did the world once seem to me. This world, the eternally imperfect, an eternal contradiction's image, an imperfect image, an intoxicating joy to its imperfect creator, thus did the world once seem to me. Thus, once on a time, did I also cast my fancy beyond man, like all backworldsmen. Beyond man, forsooth. Ah, you brothers, that God whom I created was human work and human madness, like all the gods. A man was he, and only a poor fragment of a man and ego. Out of my own ashes and glow it came to me, that phantom, and verily it came not unto me from the beyond. What happened, my brothers? I surpassed myself, the suffering one. I carried my own ashes to the mountain. A brighter flame I contrived for myself. And lo, thereupon, the phantom withdrew from me. To me, the convalescent, would it now be suffering and torment to believe in such phantoms? Suffering would it now be to me, and humiliation? Thus speak I to backworldsmen. Suffering was it, and impotence, that created all back worlds, and the short madness of happiness, which only the greatest sufferer experiences. Weariness, which seeks to get to the ultimate with one leap, with a death leap, a poor, ignorant weariness, unwilling even to will any longer, that created all gods and back worlds. Believe me, my brothers, it was the body which despaired of the body. It groped with the fingers of the infatuated spirit at the ultimate walls. Believe me, my brothers, it was the body which despaired of the earth. It heard the bowels of existence speaking to it, and then it sought to get through the ultimate walls with its head, and not with its head only, into the other world. But that other world is well concealed from man, that dehumanized, inhuman world, which is a celestial naught, and the bowels of existence do not speak to man, except as man. Verily, it is difficult to prove all being, and hard to make it speak. Tell me, you brothers, is not the strangest of all things best proved? Yea, this ego, with its contradiction and perplexity, speaks most uprightly of its being. This creating, willing, evaluating ego, which is the measure and value of things. And this most upright existence, the ego, it speaks of the body, and still implies the body, even when it muses and raves and flutters with broken wings. Always more uprightly learns it to speak, the ego, and the more it learns, the more does it find titles and honours for the body and the earth. A new pride taught me my ego, and that teach I to men, no longer to thrust one's head into the sand of celestial things, but to carry it freely, a terrestrial head which gives meaning to the earth. A new will teach I to men, to choose that path which man has followed blindly, and to approve of it, and no longer to slink aside from it, like the sick and perishing. The sick and perishing! It was they who despised the body and the earth, and invented the heavenly world, and the redeeming blood drops. But even those sweet and sad poisons they borrowed from the body and the earth. From their misery they sought escape, and the stars were too remote for them. And then they sighed, "Oh, that there were heavenly paths by which to steal into another existence and into happiness!" Then they contrived for themselves their bypaths and bloody draughts. Beyond the sphere of their body and this earth, they now fancied themselves transported, these ungrateful ones. But to what did they owe the convulsion and rapture of their transport? To their body and this earth. Gentle is Zarathustra to the sickly. Verily, he is not indignant at their modes of consolation and ingratitude. May they become convalescents and overcomers, and create higher bodies for themselves. Neither is Zarathustra indignant at a convalescent who looks tenderly on his delusions, and at midnight steals round the grave of his god. But sickness, and a sick frame, remain even in his tears. Many sickly ones have there always been among those who muse and languish for God. Violently they hate the discerning ones, and the latest of virtues, which is uprightness. Backward they always gaze, toward dark ages. Then, indeed, were delusion and faith something different. Raving of the reason was likeness to God, and doubt was sin. Too well do I know those godlike ones. They insist on being believed in, and that doubt is sin. Too well also do I know what they themselves most believe in. Verily, not in backworlds and redeeming blood drops, but in the body do they also believe most. And their own body is for them the thing in itself. But it is a sickly thing to them, and gladly would they get out of their skin. Therefore hearken they to the preachers of death, and themselves preach back worlds. Hearken rather, my brothers, to the voice of the healthy body. It is a more upright and pure voice. More uprightly and purely speaks the healthy body, perfect and square-built, and it speaks of the meaning of the earth. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 4. The despisers of the body. To the despisers of the body will I speak my word. I wish them neither to learn afresh nor teach anew, but only to bid farewell to their own bodies, and thus be dumb. Body am I, and soul, so says the child. And why should one not speak like children? But the awakened one, the knowing one, says, Body am I entirely, and nothing more, and soul is only the name of something in the body. The body is a big sagacity, a plurality, with one sense, a war and a peace, a flock and a shepherd. An instrument of your body is also your little sagacity, my brother, which you call spirit, a little instrument and plaything of your big sagacity. Ego, say you, and are proud of that word. But the greater thing, in which you are unwilling to believe, is your body with its big sagacity. It says not ego, but does it. What the sense feels, what the spirit discerns, has never its end in itself. But sense and spirit would like to persuade you that they are the end of all things, so vain are they. Instruments and playthings are sense and spirit. Behind them there is still the self. The self seeks with the eyes of the senses. It hearkens also with the ears of the spirit. Ever hearkens the self, and seeks. It compares, masters, conquers, and destroys. It rules, and is also the ego's ruler. Behind your thoughts and feelings, my brother, there is a mighty lord, an unknown sage. It is called Self. It dwells in your body. It is your body. There is more sagacity in your body than in your best wisdom. And who then knows why your body requires just your best wisdom? Yourself laughs at your ego and its proud prancings. What are these prancings and flights of thought to me, it says to itself, a byway to my purpose? I am the leading string of the ego and the prompter of its notions. The self says to the ego, feel pain, and thereupon it suffers and thinks how it may put an end thereto. And for that very purpose it is meant to think. The self says to the ego, feel pleasure. Thereupon it rejoices, and thinks how it may oft times rejoice, and for that very purpose it is meant to think. To the despisers of the body will I speak a word. That they despise is caused by their esteem. What is it that created esteeming and despising and worth and will? The creating self created for itself esteeming and despising. It created for itself joy and woe. The creating body created for itself spirit as a hand to its will. Even in your folly and despising, you each serve yourself, you despisers of the body. I tell you, your very self wants to die and turns away from life. No longer can yourself do that which it desires most, create beyond itself. That is what it desires most. That is all its further. But it is now too late to do so. So yourself wishes to succumb, you despisers of the body. To succumb, so wishes yourself. And therefore have you become despisers of the body, for you can no longer create beyond yourselves. And therefore are you now angry with life and with the earth. An unconscious envy is in the sidelong look of your contempt. I go not your way, you despisers of the body. You are no bridges for me to the Superman. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 5. Joys and Passions. My brother, when you have a virtue, and it is your own virtue, you have it in common with no one. To be sure, you would call it by name and caress it. You would pull its ears and amuse yourself with it. And lo, then you have its name in common with the people, and have become one of the people and the herd with your virtue. Better for you to say, ineffable is it, and nameless, that which is pain and sweetness to my soul, and also the hunger of my bowels. Let your virtue be too high for the familiarity of names, and if you must speak of it, be not ashamed to stammer about it. Thus speak, and stammer, that is my good, that do I love, thus does it please me entirely, thus only do I desire the good. Not as the law of a god do I desire it, not as a human law or a human need do I desire it. It is not to be a guidepost for me to super-earths and paradises. An earthly virtue is it which I love. Little prudence is therein, and the least everyday wisdom. But that bird built its nest beside me. Therefore I love and cherish it. Now sits it beside me on its golden eggs. Thus should you stammer and praise your virtue. Once had you passions and called them evil, but now have you only your virtues. They grew out of your passions. You implanted your highest aim into the heart of those passions. Then became they your virtues and joys. And though you were of the race of the hot-tempered, or of the voluptuous, or of the fanatical, or the vindictive, all your passions in the end became virtues, and all your devils, angels. Once had you wild dogs in your cellar, but they changed at last into birds and charming songstresses. Out of your poisons brewed you balsam for yourself. Your cow, affliction, milked you. Now drink you the sweet milk of her udder. And nothing evil grows in you any longer, unless it be the evil that grow out of the conflict of your virtues. My brother, if you be fortunate, then you will have one virtue and no more. Thus go you easier over the bridge. Illustrious is it to have many virtues, but a hard lot. And many a one has gone into the wilderness and killed himself, because he was weary of being the battle and battlefield of virtues. My brother, are war and battle evil? Necessary, however, is the evil. Necessary are the envy and the distrust and the backbiting among the virtues. Lo, how each of your virtues is covetous of the highest place. It wants your whole spirit to be its herald. It wants your whole power in wrath, hatred, and love. Jealous is every virtue of the others, and a dreadful thing is jealousy. Even virtues may succumb by jealousy. He whom the flame of jealousy encompasses turns at last, like the scorpion, the poison sting against himself. Ah, my brother, have you never seen a virtue backbite and stab itself? Man is something that has to be surpassed, and therefore shall you love your virtues, for you will succumb by them. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 6. The Pale Criminal. You do not mean to slay, you judges and sacrificers, until the animal has bowed its head? Lo, the pale criminal has bowed his head. Out of his eye speaks great contempt. My ego is something which is to be surpassed. My ego is to me the great contempt of man. So speaks it out of that eye. When he judged himself, that was his supreme moment. Let not the exalted one relapse again into his low estate. There is no salvation for him who thus suffers from himself, unless it be speedy death. Your slaying, you judges, shall be pity and not revenge, and in that you slay. See to it that you yourselves justify life. It is not enough that you should reconcile with him whom you slay. Let your sorrow be love to the Superman. Thus will you justify your own survival. Enemy, shall you say, but not villain. Invalid, shall you say, but not wretch. Fool, shall you say, but not sinner. And you, red judge, if you would say audibly all you have done in thought, then would everyone cry, away with the nastiness and the virulent reptile. But one thing is the thought, another thing is the deed, and another thing is the idea of the deed. The wheel of causality does not roll between them. An idea made this pale man pale. Adequate was he for his deed when he did it, but the idea of it he could not endure when it was done. Evermore did he now see himself as the doer of one deed. Madness, I call this. The exception reversed itself to the rule in him. The streak of chalk bewitches the hen. The stroke he struck bewitched his weak reason. Madness after the deed, I call this. Hearken, you judges. There is another madness besides, and it is before the deed. Ah, you have not gone deep enough into this soul. Thus speaks the red judge. Why did this criminal commit murder? He meant to rob. I tell you, however, that his soul wanted blood, not booty. He thirsted for the happiness of the knife. But his weak reason understood not this madness, and it persuaded him. "What matter about blood?" it said. "Wish you not at least to make booty thereby, or take revenge?" And he hearkened to his weak reason. Like lead lay its words upon him. Thereupon he robbed when he murdered. He did not mean to be ashamed of his madness. And now once more lies the lead of his guilt upon him. And once more is his weak reason so benumbed, so paralyzed, and so dull. Could he only shake his head, then would his burden roll off. But who shakes that head? What is this man? A mass of diseases that reach out into the world through the spirit. There they want to get their prey. What is this man? A coil of wild serpents that are seldom at peace among themselves. So they go forth apart and seek prey in the world. Look at that poor body. What it suffered and craved, the poor soul interpreted to itself. It interpreted it as murderous desire and eagerness for the happiness of the knife. Him who now turns sick, the evil overtakes, which is now the evil. He seeks to cause pain with that which causes him pain. But there have been other ages, and another evil and good. Once was doubt evil, and the will to self. Then the invalid became a heretic or sorcerer. As heretic or sorcerer he suffered and sought to cause suffering. But this will not enter your ears. It hurts your good people, you tell me. But what does it matter to me about your good people? Many things in your good people cause me disgust, and verily, not their evil. I would that they had a madness by which they succumbed, like this pale criminal. Verily, I would that their madness were called truth, or fidelity, or justice. But they have their virtue in order to live long, and in wretched self-complacency. I am a railing alongside the torrent. Whoever is able to grasp me may grasp me. Your crutch, however, I am not. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 7. Reading and Writing. Of all that is written, I love only what a person has written with his blood. Write with blood, and you will find that blood is spirit. It is no easy task to understand unfamiliar blood. I hate the reading idlers. He who knows the reader does nothing more for the reader. Another century of readers, and spirit itself will stink. Everyone being allowed to learn to read ruins in the long run not only writing, but also thinking. Once spirit was God, then it became man, and now it even becomes populous. He that writes in blood and proverbs does not want to be read, but learnt by heart. In the mountains, the shortest way is from peak to peak, but for that route you must have long legs. Proverbs should be peaks, and those spoken to should be big and tall. The atmosphere rare and pure, danger near, and the spirit full of a joyful wickedness. Thus are things well matched. I want to have goblins about me, for I am courageous. The courage which scares away ghosts creates for itself goblins. It wants to laugh. I no longer feel in common with you. The very cloud which I see beneath me, the blackness and heaviness at which I laugh, that is your thunder cloud. You look aloft when you long for exaltation, and I look downward, because I am exalted. Who among you can at the same time laugh and be exalted? He who climbs on the highest mountains laughs at all tragic plays and tragic realities. Courageous, unconcerned, scornful, coercive, so wisdom wishes us. She is a woman, and ever loves only a warrior.
You tell me. Life is hard to bear.
But for what purpose should you have your pride in the morning and your resignation in the evening? Life is hard to bear, but do not affect to be so delicate. We are all of us fine sumpter asses and assesses. What have we in common with the rosebud, which trembles because a drop of dew has formed upon it? It is true we love life, not because we are wont to live, but because we are wont to love. There is always some madness in love, but there is always also some method in madness. And to me also, who appreciate life, the butterflies and soap bubbles and whatever is like them amongst us seem most to enjoy happiness. To see these light, foolish, pretty, lively little sprites flit about, that moves Zarathustra to tears and songs. I should only believe in a god that would know how to dance. And when I saw my devil, I found him serious, thorough, profound, solemn. He was the spirit of gravity. Through him all things fall. Not by wrath, but by laughter do we slay. Come, let us slay the spirit of gravity. I learnt to walk. Since then have I let myself run. I learnt to fly. Since then I do not need pushing in order to move from a spot. Now I am light. Now do I fly. Now do I see myself under myself. Now there dances a god in me. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 8. The Tree on the Hill. Zarathustra's eye had perceived that a certain youth avoided him, and as he walked alone one evening over the hills surrounding the town called the Pied Cow, behold, there found he the youth sitting leaning against a tree and gazing with wearied look into the valley. Zarathustra thereupon laid hold of the tree beside which the youth sat, and spoke thus, "If I wished to shake this tree with my hands, I should not be able to do so. But the wind, which we see not, troubles and bends it as it lists. We are sorest bent and troubled by invisible hands." Thereupon the youth arose, disconcerted, and said, "I hear Zarathustra, and just now was I thinking of him." Zarathustra answered, "Why are you frightened on that account? But it is the same with man as with the tree. The more he seeks to rise into the height and light, the more vigorously do his roots struggle earthward, downward, into the dark and deep, into the evil." "Yea, into the evil," cried the youth. "How is it possible that you have discovered my soul?" Zarathustra smiled and said, "Many a soul one will never discover, unless one first invent it."
"Yea, into the evil," cried the youth once more. "You said the truth, Zarathustra. I trust myself no longer, since I sought to rise into the height, and nobody trusts me any longer. How does that happen? I change too quickly. My today refutes my yesterday. I often overleap the steps when I clamber. For so doing, none of the steps pardons me. When aloft, I find myself always alone. No one speaks to me. The frost of solitude makes me tremble. What do I seek on the height? My contempt and my longing increase together. The higher I clamber, the more do I despise him who clambers. What does he seek on the height? How ashamed I am of my clambering and stumbling. How I mock at my violent panting. How I hate him who flies. How tired I am on the height." Here the youth was silent, and Zarathustra contemplated the tree beside which they stood, and spoke thus, "This tree
stands lonely here on the hills. It has grown up high above man and beast. And if it wanted to speak, it would have none who could understand it. So high has it grown. Now it waits and waits. For what does it wait? It dwells too close to the seat of the clouds. It waits, perhaps, for the first lightning. When Zarathustra had said this, the youth called out with violent gestures,
"Yea, Zarathustra, you speak the truth. My destruction I longed for when I desired to be on the height, and you are the lightning for which I waited. Lo, what have I been since you have appeared amongst us? It is my envy of you that has destroyed me."
Thus spoke the youth, and wept bitterly. Zarathustra, however, put his arm about him, and led the youth away with him. And when they had walked a while together, Zarathustra began to speak thus, "It rends my heart. Better than your words express it, your eyes tell me all your danger. As yet, you are not free. You still seek freedom. Too unslept has your seeking made you, and too wakeful. On the open height would you be, for the stars thirst your soul, but your bad impulses also thirst for freedom. Your wild dogs want liberty. They bark for joy in their cellar when your spirit endeavours to open all prison doors. Still are you a prisoner, it seems to me, who devises liberty for himself. Ah, sharp becomes the soul of such prisoners, but also deceitful and wicked. To purify himself is still necessary for the freedman of the spirit. Much of the prison and the mould still remains in him. Pure has his eye still to become. Yea, I know your danger. But by my love and hope I conjure you, cast not your love and hope away. Noble you feel yourself still, and noble others also feel you still, though they bear you a grudge and cast evil looks. Know this, that to everybody a noble one stands in the way. Also to the good a noble one stands in the way. And even when they call him a good man, they want thereby to put him aside. The new would the noble man create, and a new virtue. The old wants the good man, and that the old should be conserved. But it is not the danger of the noble man to turn a good man, but lest he should become a blusterer, a scoffer, or a destroyer. I have known noble ones who lost their highest hope, and then they disparaged all high hopes. Then lived they shamelessly in temporary pleasures, and beyond the day had hardly a name. Spirit is also voluptuousness, said they. Then broke the wings of their spirit, and now it creeps about and defiles where it gnaws. Once they thought of becoming heroes, but sensualists are they now. A trouble and a terror is the hero to them. But by my love and hope I conjure you, cast not away the hero in your soul. Maintain wholly your highest hope. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 9. The Preachers of Death. There are preachers of death, and the earth is full of those to whom desistance from life must be preached. Full is the earth of the superfluous. Marred is life by the many too many. May they be decoyed out of this life by the life eternal. The Yellow Ones. So are called the preachers of death, or the Black Ones. But I will show them to you in other colours besides. There are the terrible ones, who carry about in themselves the beast of prey, and have no choice except lusts or self-laceration, and even their lusts are self-laceration. They have not yet become men, those terrible ones. May they preach desistance from life and pass away themselves. There are the spiritually consumptive ones. Hardly are they born when they begin to die, and long for doctrines of lassitude and renunciation. They would like to be dead, and we should approve of their wish. Let us beware of awakening those dead ones, and of damaging those living coffins. They meet an invalid, or an old man, or a corpse, and immediately they say, "Life is refuted." But they only are refuted, and their eye, which sees only one aspect of existence, shrouded in thick melancholy, and eager for the little casualties that bring death, thus do they wait and clench their teeth. Or else they grasp at sweetmeats, and mock at their childishness thereby. They cling to their straw of life, and mock at their still clinging to it. Their wisdom speaks thus: "A fool, he who remains alive. But so far are we fools, and that is the most foolish thing in life." Life is only suffering, so say others, and lie not. Then see to it that you cease. See to it that the life ceases which is only suffering. And let this be the teaching of your virtue: you shall slay yourself. You shall steal away from yourself. Lust is sin, so say some who preach death. Let us go apart and beget no children. Giving birth is troublesome, say others. Why still give birth? One bears only the unfortunate. And they also are preachers of death. Pity is necessary, so says a third party. Take what I have, take what I am. So much less does life bind me. Were they consistently pitiful, then they would make their neighbours sick of life. To be wicked, that would be their true goodness. But they want to be rid of life. What care they if they bind others still faster with their chains and gifts? And you also, to whom life is rough labour and disquiet, are you not very tired of life? Are you not very ripe for the sermon of death? All you to whom rough labour is dear, and the rapid, new and strange, you put up with yourselves badly. Your diligence is flight, and the will to self-forgetfulness. If you believed more in life, then you would devote yourselves less to the momentary. But for waiting, you have not enough of capacity in you, nor even for idling. Everywhere resound the voices of those who preach death, and the earth is full of those to whom death has to be preached. Or life eternal, it is all the same to me, if only they pass away quickly. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 10. War and Warriors. By our best enemies, we do not want to be spared, nor by those either whom we love from the very heart. So let me tell you the truth. My brothers in war, I love you from the very heart. I am, and was ever, your counterpart, and I am also your best enemy. So let me tell you the truth. I know the hatred and envy of your hearts. You are not great enough not to know of hatred and envy. Then be great enough not to be ashamed of them. And if you cannot be saints of knowledge, then, I pray you, be at least its warriors. They are the companions and forerunners of such saintship. I see many soldiers. Could I but see many warriors? Uniform, one calls what they wear. May it not be uniform what they therewith hide. You shall be those whose eyes ever seek for an enemy, for your enemy. And with some of you there is hatred at first sight. Your enemy shall you seek. Your war shall you wage, and for the sake of your thoughts. And if your thoughts succumb, your uprightness shall still shout triumph thereby. You shall love peace as a means to new wars, and the short peace more than the long. You, I advise, not to work, but to fight. You, I advise, not to peace, but to victory. Let your work be a fight. Let your peace be a victory. One can only be silent and sit peacefully when one has arrow and bow. Otherwise one prates and quarrels. Let your peace be a victory. You say it is the good cause which hallows even war? I say to you, it is the good war which hallows every cause. War and courage have done more great things than charity. Not your sympathy, but your bravery has hitherto saved the victims. What is good, you ask? To be brave is good. Let the little girls say, to be good is what is pretty and at the same time touching. They call you heartless, but your heart is true, and I love the bashfulness of your goodwill. You are ashamed of your flow, and others are ashamed of their ebb. You are ugly? Well then, my brothers, take the sublime about you, the mantle of the ugly. And when your soul becomes great, then does it become haughty, and in your sublimity there is wickedness. I know you. In wickedness the haughty man and the weakling meet. But they misunderstand one another. I know you. You shall only have enemies to be hated, but not enemies to be despised. You must be proud of your enemies. Then the successes of your enemies are also your successes. Resistance. That is the distinction of the slave. Let your distinction be obedience. Let your commanding itself be obeying. To the good warrior sounds, you shall, pleasanter than I will. And all that is dear to you, you shall first have it commanded to you. Let your love to life be love to your highest hope, and let your highest hope be the highest thought of life. Your highest thought, however, you shall have it commanded to you by me, and it is this. Man is something that is to be surpassed. So live your life of obedience and of war. What matter about long life? What warrior wishes to be spared? I spare you not. I love you from my very heart, my brothers in war. Thus spoke Zarathustra. 22. The Bestowing Virtue. 1. When Zarathustra had taken leave of the town to which his heart was attached, the name of which is the Pied Cow, there followed him many people who called themselves his disciples and kept him company. Thus came they to a crossroad. Then Zarathustra told them that he now wanted to go alone, for he was fond of going alone. His disciples, however, presented him at his departure with a staff, on the golden handle of which a serpent twined round the sun. Zarathustra rejoiced on account of the staff, and supported himself thereon. Then spoke he thus to his disciples, "Tell me, pray, how came gold to the highest value? Because it is uncommon, and unprofiting, and beaming, and soft in lustre. It always bestows itself. Only as image of the highest virtue came gold to the highest value. Gold-like beams the glance of the bestower. Gold-lustre makes peace between moon and sun. Uncommon is the highest virtue, and unprofiting, beaming is it, and soft of lustre. A bestowing virtue is the highest virtue. Verily, I divine you well, my disciples. You strive, like me, for the bestowing virtue. What should you have in common with cats and wolves? Is it your thirst to become sacrifices and gifts yourselves? And therefore have you the thirst to accumulate all riches in your soul? Insatiably strives your soul for treasures and jewels, because your virtue is insatiable in desiring to bestow. You constrain all things to flow towards you and into you, so that they shall flow back again out of your fountain, as the gifts of your love. Verily, an appropriator of all values must such bestowing love become, but healthy and holy I call this selfishness. Another selfishness is there, an all too poor and hungry kind, which would always steal, the selfishness of the sick, the sickly selfishness. With the eye of the thief, it looks upon all that is lustrous. With the craving of hunger, it measures him who has abundance, and ever does it prowl round the tables of bestowers. Sickness speaks in such craving, an invisible degeneration. Of a sickly body speaks the larcenous craving of this selfishness. Tell me, my brother, what do we think bad, and worst of all? Is it not degeneration? And we always suspect degeneration when the bestowing soul is lacking. Upward goes our course, from genera on to supergenera. But a horror to us is the degenerating sense, which says, all for myself. Upward soars our sense. Thus is it a simile of our body, a simile of an elevation. Such similes of elevations are the names of the virtues. Thus goes the body through history, a becomer and fighter. And the spirit, what is it to the body? Its fights and victories herald, its companion and echo. Similes are all names of good and evil. They do not speak out, they only hint. A fool who seeks knowledge from them. Give heed, my brothers, to every hour when your spirit would speak in similes. There is the origin of your virtue. Elevated is then your body, and raised up. With its delight enraptures it the spirit, so that it becomes creator, and valuer, and lover, and everything's benefactor. When your heart overflows, broad and full like the river, a blessing and a danger to the lowlanders, there is the origin of your virtue. When you are exalted above praise and blame, and your will would command all things as a loving one's will, there is the origin of your virtue. When you despise pleasant things and the effeminate couch, and cannot couch far enough from the effeminate, there is the origin of your virtue. When you are willers of one will, and when that change of every need is needful to you, there is the origin of your virtue. Verily, a new good and evil is it. Verily, a new deep murmuring, and the voice of a new fountain. Power is it, this new virtue. A ruling thought is it, and around it a subtle soul. A golden sun, with the serpent of knowledge around it. 2. Here paused Zarathustra a while, and looked lovingly on his disciples. Then he continued to speak thus, and his voice had changed. Remain true to the earth, my brothers, with the power of your virtue. Let your bestowing love and your knowledge be devoted to be the meaning of the earth. Thus do I pray and conjure you. Let it not fly away from the earthly, and beat against eternal walls with its wings.
There has always been so much flown-away virtue.
Lead, like me, the flown-away virtue back to the earth,
yea, back to body and life,
that it may give to the earth its meaning, a human meaning.
100 times hitherto has spirit, as well as virtue, flown away and blundered. Alas, in our body dwells still all this delusion and blundering. Body and will has it there become. 100 times hitherto has spirit, as well as virtue, attempted and erred.
Yea, an attempt has man been.
Alas, much ignorance and error has become embodied in us. Not only the rationality of millenniums, also their madness breaks out in us. Dangerous is it to be an heir. Still fight we step by step with the giant chance, and over all mankind has hitherto ruled nonsense, the lack of sense. Let your spirit and your virtue be devoted to the sense of the earth, my brothers. Let the value of everything be determined anew by you. Therefore shall you be fighters. Therefore shall you be creators. Intelligently does the body purify itself. Attempting with intelligence, it exalts itself. To the discerners, all impulses sanctify themselves. To the exalted, the soul becomes joyful. Physician, heal yourself. Then will you also heal your patient. Let it be his best cure to see with his eyes him who makes himself whole. 1,000 paths are there which have never yet been trodden. 1,000 salubrities and hidden islands of life. Unexhausted and undiscovered is still man and man's world. Awake and hearken, you lonesome ones. From the future come winds with stealthy pinions, and to fine ears good tidings are proclaimed. You lonesome ones of today, you seceding ones, you shall one day be a people. Out of you who have chosen yourselves, shall a chosen people arise, and out of it the Superman. Verily, a place of healing shall the earth become, and already is a new odour diffused around it, a salvation-bringing odour, and a new hope.
3. When Zarathustra had spoken these words, he paused, like one who had not said his last word, and long did he balance the staff doubtfully in his hand. At last he spoke thus, and his voice had changed.
I now go alone, my disciples. You also now go away, and alone. So will I have it. Verily, I advise you, depart from me, and guard yourselves against Zarathustra. And better still, be ashamed of him. Perhaps he has deceived you. The man of knowledge must be able not only to love his enemies, but also to hate his friends. One requites a teacher badly if one remain merely a scholar. And why will you not pluck at my wreath? You venerate me. But what if your veneration should some day collapse? Take heed, lest a statue crush you. You say, you believe in Zarathustra. But of what account is Zarathustra? You are my believers. But of what account are all believers? You had not yet sought yourselves. Then did you find me. So do all believers. Therefore, all belief is of so little account. Now do I bid you lose me and find yourselves, and only when you have all denied me will I return to you. Verily, with other eyes, my brothers, shall I then seek my lost ones.
With another love shall I then love you. And once again shall you have become friends to me, and children of one hope. Then will I be with you for the third time, to celebrate the great noontide with you. And it is the great noontide, when man is in the middle of his course between animal and superman, and celebrates his advance to the evening as his highest hope, for it is the advance to a new morning. At such time will the down-goer bless himself, that he should be an overgoer, and the sun of his knowledge will be at noontide. Dead are all the gods. Now do we desire the superman to live. Let this be our final will at the great noontide. Thus spoke Zarathustra.